Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Hi, everyone. Sophia Bush here. Welcome to Work in Progress, where I talk to people who inspire me about how they got to where they are and where they think they're still going. Hey, hey, everyone. I am so excited for you all to hear from today's guest. I had actually never met her before this taping, but I am a longtime fan and she was very patient with me while I fangirled her as soon as she walked into my office. Tig Notaro has been named one of the 50 best stand-up comics of all time, casual, by Rolling Stone, and she has such an interesting story. Today, we're going to talk about how she got into comedy in the first place, how she found her way to the mic, what it's like to actually bomb a set. Honestly, even talking about it gave me such an immense amount of anxiety. What happened when her stand-up set about having cancer went viral? And by the way, she didn't even know what that meant. Her new love of nutrition and so much more. And bonus, you're in luck because she happens to be touring right now. So enjoy. Here's Tig Notaro. I'm very excited that you're here today, as I've just admitted, because I've had like a bit of a fangirl moment and you're being very patient with me and I appreciate you. You are just hands down one of my favorite comedians and I'm excited to talk about all the things today.
Well, great. Thanks.
Yeah. Cool.
I hope I don't let you down.
Well, if you do, get out.
Yeah. I'm off the clock, so I might not be hilarious.
Well, that's fair. You can't be on all the time.
No, I really can't.
You got to recharge the battery sometimes.
For sure.
Do you ever have that when, and I would imagine when you're on tour, like you know that people are looking for you in cities that you're visiting and performing in. Do you ever have that moment where like you know that there's a run-in coming and you're like, oh, I just don't have it right now. Oh, God.
Yeah, but I feel like when I tour, there's only a very small window where somebody could catch me.
Ah.
Because I show up, and I'm not exaggerating, less than 5 minutes before I walk on stage.
No.
Yeah. And then as soon as I say thank you and goodnight, I'm nowhere to be found. And I am brushing my teeth about 10 minutes later in my hotel room.
Oh, you have it down to a system.
Oh, yeah. And then in the morning, I scope out all the different plant-based restaurants in the area, and then I make my selection. And one of them gets a quick visit from me to go, and then I'm in the car to the next town or to the airport.
Right.
So I'm not really out and about, but if you are in the alley that I'm walking into to get into my car, or going into the restaurant to get, you know, to try the local plant-based meal.
Right.
Then I'll probably run into you for a few minutes.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. A system.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
So I always like to go a little bit backwards with people because, you know, people listening who have seen your work know you now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always really curious about who people were as kids.
Yeah.
And maybe that's because I have this feeling of perspective now where I see how the dots connect. And I'm like, oh, yeah. If I look at my life, I get how I wound up here.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that you were born in Mississippi and you were raised in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
What were you like this when you were 5, 8, 10? You know, what was childhood for you?
Well, I mean, I certainly am not as, I mean, I have an introverted, shy side of myself that was present as a child as well, but it's kind of the same now where if I know somebody or I'm comfortable, I'm completely fine. And I'm not great in crowds. I was never great in crowds, but I also liked the attention of being a class clown. And I feel like the more that I've had the opportunity to perform as a comedian, I've lost the need to perform socially. You know, I get a lot of from strangers that don't know me of, really, you're a comedian, you know, because it's not my go-to. Whereas mm-hmm. before I was doing stand-up, I very much presented myself as the funny person, but I got my fill, I think.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Because you get rewarded for it. Like, you get the audience reaction, you get the laughter.
Yeah.
You get the charge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wild to me that getting it for you doesn't make you want more of it elsewhere, when you're off stage.
Yeah. It's not that I don't have fun or joke around or whatever, but it's not my go-to, which was my go-to. It was... Mm-hmm. When I, you know, what I feel like I have maintained since my childhood is I've identified as cool, you know, and I still kind of can't shake that where I'm like, I'm cool. That's my thing. I'm cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I also lose my cool just as I did as a kid. And it's a further fall. When you identify as cool, you know, and then you lose your cool in whatever way. It's a really long drop and it's painful, you know, because you walk in and you're like, I'm the Fonz, I'm cool. And then you, oops, you're not. You do something that's not cool. And then it's, you know, I'm not saying I don't enjoy those moments as well.
Sure.
Because it's fun to fall and feel human and be like, oh, wow, that was an embarrassing misunderstanding, or that was not quite what I was aiming for. But yeah, I certainly enjoy the humor in moments and making people laugh and all of that stuff. But I think, you know, when people see you as the funny person, there can be a lot of pressure for that. I used to always paint a picture of going to a party and on the way seeing it, this didn't happen, but you see an accident, you see people die in a car accident, and you get to the party and you're like, oh my God, I saw an accident. And people are like, yeah, yeah, then what happened? You know, they're expecting the punchline. You're like, no. That people died, and they're like, how many people died?
They're like, something's coming.
Yeah, and you're like, no, they're...
You're like, so, I'm actually traumatized.
Yeah,
that's what's coming.
So trying to find the... I think just being a public figure that is known to be funny, people can approach me with the that pressure of... they want something funny. They want a funny interaction. It's a really quick example was I was test driving cars a few days ago, and I asked the guy if there were vegan seat options, and he recognized me, and he started laughing so hard. He goes, man, I can see how that would be really fun hanging out with you. And I was like, no, I turned to my wife and I said, he thought I was joking. I'm really curious if there's vegan seed options. It's possible. There's right. vegan clothing. There's, you know, but he thought it was being hilarious.
Yeah.
But I just let him think that I was joking and moved on. Yeah. Clearly there wasn't by his reaction.
Of course.
So.
You're like, there's your zinger, sir.
Yeah.
I will Google this question later.
Yeah, right. I'll anonymously call and ask somebody else.
Yeah, who can't see my face.
Right. Right.
I feel that. I do. I think it's really interesting, though, the distinction, because you said, of course, you love to, like, have a good time, and you have obviously have a sense of humor. You do this for a living. But the delineation between having your humor be, like, your device, mm-hmm. like, your go-to, your way to do the thing in the room,
mm-hmm.
and then doing it so well or in a way that's so fulfilling in your career, alleviating that,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people who are creative struggle to find that. And I think that that's very cool.
They struggle to find something that will take that kind of need.
Yeah, like where they can kind of turn it off or not want to continuously do the thing that gets the positive reaction. I have a buddy who's a comedian and he struggled with that for a really long time. So I find it really fascinating.
Struggled in that he continued needing it and wanting it.
Yeah, like he just couldn't turn it off. Like every opportunity with another person was an opportunity to like test a joke or prove how funny he was. And there was like a while where he was a real nightmare to be around. I say that with love. But I wonder, was there a point that you observed when that started changing or when things were hitting a point in your career where you were like, oh yeah, I can leave that at work.
I'm sure just comes with more success a lot of times, mm-hmm. because more people know you, more interactions are like that, mm-hmm. you know, not every face. I'm clearly not Oprah Winfrey famous. Every face doesn't recognize my face, but the faces that do recognize me become more more frequent, and
sure.
I'm met with like this smirk of like, what is she gonna do? What is she gonna say? Or it's met with people telling me what they think is a very funny story or the wacky thing that happened to them that day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just picking out tomatoes,
right.
or I'm just flying, or I'm very tired. I didn't sleep, or I'm not needing every interaction to be the craziest, wackiest, funniest thing in the world.
Right.
And so I think it just, when you're more anonymous, fewer interactions are like that.
Mm.
And then it becomes more frequent the more people that recognize you.
Yeah.
And so.
And that's interesting. It's dawning on me as you say that each of those people has the one moment with you where they go, oh, I'm going to have this moment with her and it's going to be so fucking great. Ah!
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, but the lady in the macaroni aisle just did this to me too, man. Like,
yeah.
I just want to go home with
my
groceries.
Yeah, and I do know I am, their interaction with me is the one interaction with me, mm-hmm. whereas they are one of several people that right. have stopped me to tell me the funniest story that they had, or they're needing a bigger reaction from me. It's just an interesting thing being a comedian. You know, and some, like you said, some comedians, they enjoy it. Your friend can't get enough and love to do bits. And I think that's, I don't think one is good, bad, better than the other. It's different personalities. But my wife noticed, there's this friend of mine, there's a comedian in the comedy world, and he's married to a woman that you would never in a million years think, oh, you know what? I bet Tig would really hit it off with this woman. And she and I are at this, because we're in the comedy world, we're at a lot of events at the same time.
Mm.
She is just not who you would imagine that I would be in a corner every time blabbing and laughing with. Mm. And Stephanie pointed out, my wife, her name's Stephanie, and she said, you know what it is about her? She said, I know why you like her, and I know why she likes you. And she said, and I really enjoy her. Mm. And it's because there's not a second of small talk that comes out of her mouth. Mm. She's immediately down to expose everything about herself, her life, what's going on, and she's going to tell you honestly. Mm. And she can come across as like gossipy, or she has that vibe of like, come here. Oh my God, you're not going to believe what.
Did you hear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's layers of that as well.
Yeah.
But she talks about herself and her dynamics with her husband and her, the kid and the parents and the mother-in-law and the job and this party and this person. And you're getting real information.
Yeah.
And I'm not having to stand there and make her laugh. I'm not having to stand there and go, the hors d'oeuvres are nice. And that we would never even, we would assume the hors d'oeuvres are nice because we're shoving them in our faces.
Right.
We're not even going to talk about that.
Yeah.
It's down to, there's no small talk out of her mouth.
God, I love that.
It's really incredible. And I thought it was very insightful on Stephanie's part.
Yeah.
Because she said, that's who you it charges you. And I can see it happen. Mm. And I'm like, God, that's so true. Because if somebody would have pointed her out at a party, in fact, I'm pretty sure I'm going to see her at an event tonight. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell her Stephanie's insight.
Yeah.
Because Stephanie experienced it with her when Stephanie talked about her own sexuality and shared the different experiences and awakening she had, and mm-hmm. and she was like, let me tell you about mine. And she got down to it. There was no editing. There was no, everything is up for discussion.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. It's
those are my favorite kind of people.
Yeah, it's the best.
We literally had a conversation this morning about this, and mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know how to small talk. I can't like at the party, I have to have someone to stand in the corner with because mm-hmm. I don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
I'm like, do you want to talk about trauma? Do you want to talk about the election?
Yeah,
shall we talk about space? I love NASA.
Right.
What do you want to talk about? And people are like, you're so fucking weird.
Yeah.
So that is such a cool observation. And what a beautiful way for your wife to see you.
Mm-hmm. I loved it because I was always a little baffled by my connection with her.
Right.
It's not baffled. She's very charming. She's very, you know, bubbly, funny, but there's something where you wouldn't go, I bet the two of those would really connect.
I have a thought about what that might be because in my experience, the majority of people who I meet who go, well, have you heard?
Mm-hmm.
Follow it with something that is not that nice about other people.
Mm-hmm.
And those are not people I want to hang around with.
Right.
But if you've got someone who's like, did you know what's going on? And it made me think about this crazy fucking thing. And remember when that thing happened to you? And suddenly you're in.
Or here's my experience with this. And here's the different layers of that. And I don't mean to go on about some woman that I connect with that's not my wife. And it's nothing like that where there's an attraction of any sort. But even last night she texted me. She was like, hey, I'm at Largo if you're out and about and you want to swing by. And I was going to a show, but I kind of laughed to myself. Like, if I was driving by, I would have pulled over and gone and hung out with her.
Yeah.
You know? Because I know we're going to sit down and we're going to get into it.
Yeah.
We're going to get into something.
Yeah.
So it's, anyway, that's what I'm looking for with a connection, but I'm also not really wandering around the world feeling disconnected.
Mm.
I have very nice connections, whether it's, I mean, I have a wonderful connection with my wife. We certainly have our ups and downs, but I have very nice, connections with family and friends of decades and comedians and whatever to my next door neighbors. But anyway, blah, 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 blah.
I like it. So when you talk about what was similar then and now in sort of you growing up, and you touch on your kind of friend family from comedy, which I want to get into. Your like friend family mm-hmm. from comedy. Mm-hmm. I call all my like my collected people. I'm like my family.
Yeah,
you know, like because they are. I wonder sort of in the interim, like on your way to here where we meet, did you know you wanted to be a comedian as a kid?
I mean, I was very drawn to comedy, stand-up, mm-hmm. SNL, I Love Lucy, All in the Family,
yeah,
Sanford and Son, whatever, however comedy presented itself. My mother was funny. My father was. I was a class clown, all of that. But I had a stepfather that didn't really encourage anything outside of go to school and go to college, get a job. And I didn't know that it was an option for me out there. And I remember in sixth grade, I was playing on the street with a friend, and my friend told me, my mom thinks you could be a comedian. And I remember it electrified me. I was, she did? I mean, everyone told me I was funny, but that there was some legitimacy with my friend Dana's mother saying, Tig could be a comedian. And I was like, oh, wow. And to this day, Dana and her mother come to my shows when I'm in Texas.
Oh, that's so cool.
And I've reminded Dana that was one of those huge moments as a kid that your mother said that. And I remember also the Billy Joel song, My Life. There's a line where he says, sold the shop or closed the shop, sold the house. I don't know what the words are. Moved out to the West Coast and give stand-up routine in L.A., and I would hear that song. It would electrify me. Just, I was so, oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
But I was like, that's for other people that are special or that, and I didn't see how that would ever cross my desk in Texas or Mississippi or any of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was kind of a far-off dream, but I really didn't think. I was also very into music, but I could put the pieces together with that. You get a guitar, you put a band together, you play in your garage, you put a tape together, and you send it to a record label, and you get signed or you don't. I get it. You're on the radio or you're not. A comedian, I'd watch HBO, and somebody I'd never heard of would walk out on stage in front of a sold-out theater of 3,000 people, and I was like, who is this, and how did all those people know to go there?
Yeah.
Where's the connection? That seemed like you become president of the United States. Where's it? What? I don't understand the steps. How do I walk out on that stage? I don't know. I didn't get it. I couldn't piece anything together.
Yeah. It does seem so strange.
Yeah.
To imagine that a person could just do that.
Well, yeah. You don't understand how the industry works they got a deal. They're out doing open mics, or they have they're getting on stage at the Comedy Store or the Improv, and their rep got them a special, and then they hired an audience to fill the theater. You're just at home in Texas going, who's Paula Poundstone? I mean, I, you know, bought all her albums and went to all her concerts later, but at the time, where are people hearing this comedian? And how is she packing 3,000 people into this theater?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll never, ever be able to do that. So I'm still not sure, city to city, if I can pack those theaters. But come on out, folks.
I get that with, like, every single time. And I get it a lot when I get a new job.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, my first day on a movie, first day on a new TV set, I look around and I'm like, is this going to be the one where somebody tells me I have no fucking idea what I'm doing?
Right.
Like, is this going to be it? And after all these years, you think I'd get over it and just go to work without, like, the first day of school panic dream.
Yeah.
But I have it every time.
Yeah. See, I just show up and I tell everyone right away that I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yes.
Rather than waiting for the news to come to me.
Mm-hmm. You just get ahead of it.
Well, I always say that as soon as I see a director walking towards me, I always say, hold on one second. Before you say anything, just know I have no range. But go ahead. What were you going to say?
I like that.
Yeah.
That's a good move.
Well, especially for somebody with no range.
Perfect.
But, yeah.
You're like, let me just tell you something about myself.
Let me tell you something.
I like that plan.
Probably can't address your note, but go ahead, knock yourself out.
Fabulous. Did you talked about your mom and your eventual stepdad. Like, was her, because obviously I have like pages of prep here for everyone who can't see me sitting here with my notes spread across my lap, like the nerdy college note taker that I was and still am. But I'm curious, like, because I did so much reading and I loved reading about the way that you've talked about your mom and like the ways in which she was like wild and funny and, you know, this sort of like, I don't know if the word is zany. That's a word I like to describe like really sort of creative humans, like this woman who painted on the wall, the exterior yeah. walls of your house.
Yeah.
Do you think that you learned about comedy from her?
Oh yeah. She was my biggest teacher. I mean, I got off stage one night and my mother's one of her very close friends, who's one of my very close childhood friend's mother. Mm. I got off stage and she just said, you know, that's all, she's Cajun. She's like, that's all from your mom. You know, that's who that's from.
Aww.
You know? And I'm like, yeah, I do. I'm fully aware. But my stepfather, he's funny in his own clever way. And he's a more buttoned up, clever.
Like drier humor.
Very dry. Mm. Yeah. My mother, my father, my stepfather, we were, and then my whole family in Mississippi, they're all just such gregarious characters. It's so hard to explain. And my wife never met my mother, but mm-hmm. when she's around my family out there, I always say just being around them, their essence, which Stephanie loves, she's just always like, I love these people, you know, because it's just... everyone's in, everyone's included, everyone's part of the family, everyone's mm. up to party all night, everyone is, it's just, and everyone's talking. Whenever I see a movie or TV show and I can feel the direction where it's like clanky, everyone's talking and they're trying to make it messy and it feels very directed to me,
yeah.
I feel like they wish it looked like my family in Mississippi sitting at it's just so everybody's ribbing each other yeah. and laughing but I always say, you know, that essence, that's my mother. It's the closest I can say that would have been like if you met my mother. Mm. She's just in the middle of it all, you know, and everyone's teasing each other and loving each other. But I mean, she was very complicated and it was rough. It wasn't all mm. just like, oh, fun. My mother was beautiful. She was stylish. She was funny. She was athletic. She was a dancer, a painter. Hilarious. But she just wasn't, there were some kids' parents that were like, I don't know if they can, you know,
hang after school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the complicated look like? I mean,
the complicated looks like sometimes I didn't know where my mother was. Sometimes my mother drank too much. Mm. Sometimes we had a heroin addict that visited us from England that overdosed on our floor. Skinny dipping with who are these people?
Right.
You know, like it just... what?
Like, what is going on around here?
Yeah. What, who?
I was having this conversation the other day. A friend of mine is a beautiful musician. And we were talking about sort of swings as far as, rather than contentedness, like happiness and sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sort of positing this idea whereby to be a creative, to be an observer, to tell stories about people, to connect with people, you have to lay it all out there, right? Like, you got to crack your heart open for some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And it enables like big joy, like the kind of joy that I see on your face when you talk about your mom. Like, you look like somebody just dumped glitter on your head. You're yeah. like sparkly.
Yeah.
And to get big joy, if you think about, I get nerdy and I'm like, physics, like a metronome. Mm-hmm. If you swing this far in this direction, you're going to swing this far in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
So I think about it like if simple contentedness is like going to a +5 to a -5, but like ecstatic joy is a 90 in one direction, mm-hmm. you're going to get 90 in the other direction too.
Yeah.
But like, look at the breadth of life you get in there. Like, do you feel like you got that big swing with her?
Yes, I do. I know for a fact I did.
Cool.
And I think about it a lot, actually, with my children, because, you know, my mother didn't really alter her life in any way as a parent. Mm-hmm. She continued to do what she did, and then there were kids. And sometimes what she did was fun, which was climb a tree or climb up on the rooftop of our house and kick whatever balls or toys of ours were down there. And it became a game of, you know, my mother took risks. You know, mm-hmm. she, one of the stories I always tell is my friend that came over to visit was going home, and my mother drove me and my friend to my friend's house on the hood of her car through the neighborhood. Of course, not at 40 miles an hour, mm-hmm. but she thought that's fun and funny. She's like, get on the hood, I'll drive you home. And we were, you know, my mother going to a restaurant drive-through to get food. She'd go in reverse so that my face could pop up and order the food. You know, just, she was wild and funny and shocking and took chances. And sometimes it was fun in that way, and mm-hmm. other times it was like, oh, we're walking an edge here,
right?
Of where's my mother,
right.
or what's going on, and not feeling safe. And I feel like that sort of upbringing, I am the other side of that, where I have fun and I want to plan cool things and trips and. But I'm reeling it in where I want these little cubs in my house to feel safe. And I often am thinking, am I going to be raising boring vanilla kids that just were so safe and loved and cared for? But I think they are safe and cared for, but they're not vanilla.
Yeah.
But I do, I mean, I guess, you know, I can offer them wild moments in life through travel and the personalities mm-hmm. that we bring into our home and the experiences. I guess you don't have to be on a rooftop or stuck in a tree or on the hood of a car
right.
that's moving to get.
That feels fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can rein the boundaries in certain ways and still offer them like this creative expression and joy and silliness. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. And they have it
yeah,
tenfold. My wife and I, she's a comedian, actress, writer, all of those things. And they're surrounded by creative people with senses of humor. And
yeah.
And they're interesting, funny little people. And that was always just my hope was, I remember always people that were maybe doing IVF or getting some sort of donor for looking into donors or their kids. And they'd, oh, I want him to be tall and handsome. And I always thought, you know what I want? I want anybody, if they're at a party or something, to say, oh my gosh, have you talked to Tig's kid? You have to go talk to yeah. that kid. I want somebody to walk away and go, oh my God, go talk to the kid.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't, the tall, beautiful, I mean, just by chance, my kids are tall and beautiful. But
look at you just winning the genetic lottery.
We kind of did. But yeah, they're interesting, funny little people.
That's
I always
so
say
cool.
I live in a house full of writers, people that write my material for me.
Love that.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So, God, when you think about like where life is now and all the sort of ingredients in the special sauce, there was something you said earlier that I do find really interesting, how you'd be home, you were home, you know, watching Paula Poundstone, for example, being like, how the fuck, what's going on here?
Yeah.
What was the bridge for you? Like, when did you leave Texas to come to LA? How did you start? Because there are, I would imagine, so many people listening who've watched your special and be like, but how did she do that?
I did it in a very roundabout way, and it was accidental. Because I feel like I wasn't, my mother was an artist and nurtured that side of me, but my stepfather kind of overruled and it was.
There was a rule book.
Yeah. And that's something maybe you do as a child. You color, you draw, you play music, but now you're an adult. And what's your job? What are you going to study? So my love for music turned from, I play guitar and drums. I'm nothing special with it, but I love music and I play it. And I thought, well, I'll get into the business side of it. So I started working in the business side of music and working for record labels and bands and whatever. And my close friends that I've known since I was a kid, they were moving out here. We had moved around together. I was following their educational trajectory, but I wasn't going to school. I was just, oh, we're moving to Austin now? Oh, okay, you're going to grad school in Denver? Great, let's go. Oh, okay, you're going to go to Hollywood, become a producer? Cool, I'm sure I can find something to do.
And what were you doing at all these stops?
I was, you know, working odd jobs, working in the music business. I'd work for a label or something, promoting bands. And then I got out to L.A. and opened the L.A. Weekly, and I saw all of the options for stand-up. And that it was in coffee shops, it was in bars, it was in laundromats, it was in some comedy clubs. But I mean, it was in every weird place you could walk into. And I said, oh my gosh, I want to go see some comedy shows. And so my friend went with me every night for 2 weeks to see open mics and regular comedy shows. And I said, I feel like I could do this.
Mm.
And so I gave myself that 2 week window to go check out the whole scene. I mean, the majority of it, and get a feel.
Yeah.
And then I made myself do stand up, do an open mic after 2 weeks. And I haven't stopped since.
How was the first one?
The first one was deceivingly good.
No. I feel like my stomach would fall out of my ass if I had to get up. And I love comedy. I don't know. It feels so scary to me.
Yeah. It went well in that I had been home in my apartment talking to myself in a mirror for 2 weeks and writing my material. And I didn't account for laughs, which was the funniest part, because I was silently talking to myself in my studio apartment. And then when I was on stage at this coffee shop and I got laughs, I looked around, I remember thinking, oh, right, that's what I'm doing this for. But I forgot, because I was talking to myself for Hello. 2 weeks. So it went well. And then the following night, I signed up for a competition because I really was feeling cocky. I thought, well, this is the easiest thing in the world. And then I bombed. And I ran off stage in the middle.
In the competition.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that experience like? Because I'm guessing most people who are listening have never done comedy. What is it like to bomb? What do you do? What's happening up there?
It is so unsettling. And it is the begin. I mean, that was my first two times doing stand-up. Doing well at the coffee shop and then bombing at the competition. We were competing for $100.
Hey.
And I couldn't have had two more perfect stand-up moments, because it's the other side of each other, of doing well and bombing, that keeps you going. And it's that gambling, it's that addiction, it's that unhealthy relationship with somebody. You can get it back again. You can do it again. I saw myself do it. I can win the jackpot. I can get my girlfriend back. I can, you know, you're chasing that thing. And I think that, I don't know. I'm not a big drinker. I don't do drugs. I don't have a lot of those. I don't gamble. I don't, I always say I'm not really up to anything. You can check in on me. I'm not up to anything, but, that drive is there, and that, like, it's chasing that. I could get it back. I could do it again. And you do it again and you're high, and then you hit your low and you want to get it back again. Whether you've been off stage a while or you bombed, you hit that low of, I gotta, or it, but also, I mean, woven in there is you have to have something to say and a point of view, and you feel driven by, there's something I really want to share with people.
I find that really interesting. When you think about what you want to say as you start writing, where does it come from? Like, do you get like a little, does something just kind of get in and under your skin and you can't stop thinking about it, and then you decide you want to write a bit about it? Like, where does it come from for you?
You know, I always think it's amusing when I'm at a dinner with people and the attention is on me, where everybody will say, whoa, we better be careful. There's a comedian at the table, you know, careful what you say. She's going to use us in her show. And I always roll my eyes thinking, oh my gosh, this is no. I mean, it would have, it's so, I don't think it's ever come from something like that. It's just an extra sense that you develop. I mean, when you're in the beginning of your career, you are taking the stankiest material on stage because you haven't honed in on your style, and you don't know what your point of view is. And so you're just bringing all of these bombs on stage and trying them out, and it's just terrible. And then when you start to develop your sense of humor, you really can just, of course, that's the only person I can speak about. I don't want to say in a depressing way of autopilot through life, but I just mean I'm just living my life, and my sense of humor. It's like asking, how do you know when something is sad? How do you know when something makes you happy? It hits you, and you're like, right. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited, or oh my gosh, I'm so sad. That made me so sad. Comedy hits you like that. And then you take it on stage, and you can either find the angle to convey what you saw or felt or think, or you can't. I have material that it's amused me, and I've never been able to get it to translate on stage. Or I have something that was mildly amusing, and then I started closing my show with it night after night because I wanted to make it strong. And so I started to rely on the weak bit or the thing I really loved, and I just would close on it. And it would help build it to this place, you know. It's a muscle, and it's a, I don't know, but I certainly don't walk around in search of comedy.
Right.
It, I think, has to hit you as authentically as joy and pain.
Yeah. Are you, in your practice, are you a person who sets aside certain hours of the day to write?
No. Or I don't write.
You don't?
No.
You don't, like, keep a notes file on your phone?
If I leave here and I die today, nobody will find the lost writings of Thich Nhat Hanh.
Damn.
Yeah. I write on stage. I go on stage. What the most that anybody would find is a list of words. And those words just spark the feeling or the memory of an experience, a story. But yeah, you would find a list that would say tube socks or Reese Witherspoon or twins or something that happened. I'm like, oh, right. Yeah, that. I'll tell that story.
I'm fascinated.
But a lot of people, I did a show last night, and one of the comedians, they were saying, oh, okay, you could do 10 to 15 minutes. Is that cool? And I said, yeah, I'll have to move some things around in my head. And this comedian goes, oh, that's right. You don't write anything down. And I said, no. And he was like, you know, I mean, people do it differently.
Yeah. So what have you found? Because you referenced it a bit earlier in your community that I imagine you've built a pretty rad community in all these years in comedy. What is that like to be among, you know, this group of people who are all in your space? Is it like a wonderfully supportive troop of humans for the most part?
Yeah, I think that comedians are kind of known as competitive and all for themselves or insincere and I feel like it's everywhere though, but I don't feel like I've really stumbled upon too much of that. And I have made really tremendous friends over the years. And then the reality is I feel like I've kind of fell out of the scene a bit just after starting a family. And I really do have children that wake up at 3 and 4 in the morning.
Ooh.
And it's hard to have the drive to want to go sit in a comedy club and just be in that world, any world, really, after 9 p.m.
That feels fair if you're waking up at 3 a.m.
Yeah, it's hard. But I also really am enjoying this shift in my life just as much as I enjoyed that shift that started my comedy community world career.
Yeah.
But I still am out working on my material and I'm still touring. I'm just not, I have lasting friendships from that world, but I wouldn't say that I walk into comedy clubs and I'm part of the back table gaggle of people, you know?
Stages though.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. But then there are some comedians that do start a family and they still show up and they're in the back table of whatever comedy club.
Right.
And that's their world. That's right. What makes sense to them. For me, I'm like, oh my gosh, I have Stephanie and these kids and this fat cat at my house. I don't know why I would go any place else.
Yeah.
I really don't. It's like, okay, I have to go make some money. I'll go do that, but I will be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah. You're like, that fat cat stays in that sunspot.
Yes, she does.
Does she do that? My dog does that.
Oh, my. And just before I came here, Stephanie and I were sitting on the couch talking, and I looked over, and our cat was just lying in front of the fireplace. And I pointed and interrupted Stephanie by pointing at her, and I was like, that's really happening right now. A postcard just happened in our house.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Like, what is that?
Yeah.
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 I love when that
happens. I'm not trying to create the perfect Instagram life either.
Right.
Good Lord. Good Lord is life all over the place.
Yeah.
With kids and marriage and health and work and relationship, other outside relationships. It's a mess.
It's a lot to juggle.
It is a lot.
I feel like a sideshow act a lot, just trying to not drop a ball and then drop them all.
Oh my! I always say just being alive, just being one person alive, breathing in and out. That's full time.
Yeah.
And then you add a spouse, you add a career, you add twin toddlers. A cat that if we leave the house for too long, follows us around yelling at us. And then you have family.
Mm-hmm.
You try and maintain a social life.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe you have health issues or you don't.
Mm.
I don't know. It's Jenga. I guess that's that game, right?
Where
you balance the stuff.
Yeah.
Good Lord. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
But it's awesome. I have, you know, I'm set up.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You You mentioned health stuff, mm-hmm. and I know because I read a bit about you talking about how when your Largo set went viral and it really like launched your comedy career to the next level or a new level, I don't know how you would put it. Mm-hmm. This was after you'd lost your mom mm-hmm. and you were really sick. You'd just been diagnosed with cancer. You did this big show. Mm-hmm. What's it like to get up on stage and do what you do in that moment of your life and just be there with an audience and say, like, this is what's happening? Mm-hmm. I'm curious about that experience and about how that larger experience with health has kind of impacted all of this for you.
Well, I mean, I was being hit repeatedly with, I had three potentially deadly illnesses at one time. I had pneumonia, I had an intestinal infection or a disease that was eating my insides, I had invasive cancer, my girlfriend and I split up, my mother tripped, hit her head and died. It was all in 4 months. And so when I did that set, it was days after I got diagnosed with cancer. And that was the final piece to everything in 2012. And I had this show that was already booked before I got that news. So when I went on stage, my head was in a place that I was very out of body. And I also felt like I had nothing to lose. And I just didn't care. It was a whole different level that I had reached. And I just love stand up and I wanted to perform again, but I also couldn't bring myself to do material I had done previously. And and it was that kind of part of me where I needed to really have a conversation and I needed to really connect. And I put it on that audience that night and I didn't know what I was in for. I didn't know if they were going to read things correctly, if they were going to think I was kidding, and so when I had nothing to lose, I also just felt like if it doesn't go well, then that's even hilarious too, that maybe I'll die soon and my last gig will have been the biggest bomb in the world. And then that's it, you know, like how hilarious. But I was up for anything and it's, you know, tying into my mother, she took a lot of risks, good or bad. I feel like that's in my blood. It's in my bones. And every time I've taken a huge risk in my life, it's paid off, paid out tenfold. Mm. And the connection I made with that audience, every now and then I still run into somebody that was there where they say, oh, I was in that audience that night. And I feel like I've only met a few of them face to face, but I feel like we went through it. Yeah. They're so special to me because they really met me right where I was and they allowed the moment to be real in that they didn't know what was happening. There was awkward laughter. There was real hard laughter. There was crying. There was stunned silence. People were just really feeling what they were feeling. And then I just, I remember thinking, God, this is actually going okay, you know, this set. And then I walked off stage and I thought that was the end of it. I wasn't on social media. I wasn't on Twitter. I didn't understand things going. I can't explain. I've come a long way since then, but I would date people that were on Twitter or Instagram or have friends. And I never even looked to see what that was. I was like, oh yeah, I'm not on that, whatever it is. You know?
Yeah.
And so when people were like, oh yeah, it's all over Twitter. I didn't even know what that really meant.
Right.
I just woke up the next day with book deal offers.
Whoa.
With movie. My mailbox was full. I had hundreds of emails. And I'd been up so late until like 5 a.m. because my friends who I moved here with, we went out to Swingers and we were sitting there and we were talking about the set.
Yeah.
I was like, God, I can't believe I just shared all that. I was like, yeah, up all night. Went to bed, woke up. I was like, what the hell? Who died? I mean, it was the craziest thing. I felt like a great-great-grandmother that went viral. I was like, what? Who? What
is this? What's happening?
Yeah, what is how did they hear? I truly was, how did all these people find out? I didn't know people were tweeting and blogging and writing. I was just asleep in my bed. I had no idea.
Feeling like you'd been like a free rebel the night before.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing. There were five comedians on that show. They were all tweeting, telling people. And I was just like, night, night. You know, it was very bizarre.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What a trip that must have been.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, amazing things come with that, obviously. But you've also talked about how it was pretty stressful because everybody kept asking, like, what are you going to do? And what's your comedy? And who, essentially, like, who are you? How will you define yourself now?
Mm-hmm.
How did you make sense of all of that and manage an inbox and book offers and all this shit and your own health? Like, what happens next?
Well, I there's definitely a lot of stress to it. And I remember I carried that stress for a while.
Hmm.
But there was a show I did in Iowa, in Iowa City. I remember I was about to go on stage and I was so scared because I was at a different place months later. I don't know how many months after my diagnosis and my set went viral and all that. And I remember thinking, oh gosh, this theater is packed full of people that know me from having cancer and from being so down and out.
Mm.
And I'm not there and my material is different. What if, I was so paralyzed by that. But I just also had this moment of, oh well, you know, if this is, if the threat is this, if it's this fragile, then I always think about that. Then I don't, then my place isn't secure here. Then it's fine. Then it makes sense that the tie is cut and that it falls apart. Then I'm not here securely. And so I just thought, well, I'm just going to go out and if cancer and the death of my mother drew them to me, then if they're not just amused by me or happy to see me or interested in what my new material is, and they don't really, they're not really into me. And they were one of the best audiences, and I'll never forget that performance, and I'm always grateful for Iowa City.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Was it, would you say it was that performance, or was it other stuff going on behind the scenes too that helped you kind of mitigate, you know, an album being at number one and confidence feeling low? Like, there's, it's such a weird thing when you're there's all this success and to your point, you have all this stress you're carrying. Like,
well, yeah. And my health was, nothing was real secure. I was at the top and the bottom at the same time.
Yeah.
It was just, I don't know how I got through it. When I think back, it, you know, not to be cliche, but it really is just a matter of time of getting through things. Mm. And when people always ask me advice, I always, unfortunately, only have the advice to breathe in and out because I was at such a basic base place in life that I would really think a lot about my breath. And I would think, I'm alive. I'm here. You know, and that would get me through the big and the little and the stuff that did or didn't matter. It just, because I really felt like I was pushed to an edge where I saw something and I was yanked back and I'm back. And I'm breathing, and this is the only thing I can do. Take a step. Take another step.
Mm.
And it's so basic.
Mm.
Just take a tiny step. Keep moving.
Mm.
Not in a way of denial, of like, yeah, just keep moving forward. Just go. Press on. Push through. I don't mean that. I just mean just get up and take a breath and brush your teeth and get your day started. And that.
There's such a gentleness when you talk about it that way.
Yeah, it was, I had to not overwhelm myself. I had to not think too much beyond, am I here? Yep, I'm alive. I'm going to get up. I'm going to go brush my teeth. Take a deep breath. And I'm going to do a show. Or I'm not going to do a show. Or I just had to kind of take it moment to moment.
And I like that because so many people, to your point, are encouraged to like, keep going, do the thing, you'll be fine. And it's important to acknowledge that we don't always know and that we're allowed to feel not okay, and that illness or a family crisis or anything like this is scary, and it's okay to slow down.
Absolutely.
To move through that.
Mm-hmm.
So for folks listening, you're in great health now.
I am. I've had a run of it's been 6 hospitalizations in the past 7 years. Ooh. But I would say since the past 4 months, I've been doing well.
Okay.
Really well.
Good.
Yeah. Really well. I feel more in tune with my health and body than even a year ago.
What do you think took you there?
To more in tune?
Yeah.
Because I had other health issues and complications in July that I am shocked, which I shouldn't be because I'm human, but I needed another reminder of like, oh my gosh, life is so, it's embarrassing to say, fragile. Of course it's fragile, but I mean, it's a whole other discussion, but
sure.
I'm healthier and I've been in chronic pain for years. I'm out of that. I wish I could go on tour and tell everyone, eat right, make sure you get all your vitamins and minerals, brush your teeth, take care of your body. Not that I didn't take care of my body, but like really exercise, eat well. I mean, really, especially raising kids. I'm like, get your molars, get your, you know, you want to make sure your teeth, you don't want to be uncomfortable as you get older.
Right.
You don't want to, but you can't learn that until you experience it and you go, ooh, I want to get away from that pain, or I want to get as far away from being unhealthy as possible. And I want every part of my body working, which for the most part, my body's working better than it has in almost a decade.
It feels like a win.
Oh, no doubt.
Did getting here, I wouldn't even say learning, but did just getting here, did that sort of affect the way you and Stephanie and the kids, like your sort of home health practices? Like, were there changes to eating? Are there changes to the way that you kind of operate?
Well, I mean, I've come through, you know, different parts of my, of all of the health journey, and part of it was becoming plant-based.
Got it.
And Stephanie did, and the boys are, and so we have an entire family that is eating plant-based, and that took care of a lot of the pain that I was feeling.
That's so great.
And incorporating exercise, and it's very much a part of Stephanie and I are 15 years apart, and she has always said that she wanted to die around the same time. And I tried to remind her she's going to die alone because I'm 15 years older and I've had a lot of health problems. So I was like, unfortunately, you are going to find my body in the house somewhere and then you're going to die alone. And that's the reality. And she was like, but you could, you know, you should try at least. And then, so now I got on this kick since being with her where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to live to be 100.
You're like, I'm going
to
live forever.
No, she wants to live to be 100 and that's her dream in life. And I said, so that means I have to live to be 115.
Damn.
And she was like, so you really need to work at it. So I've been really working at it to the point where I think I'm now driving her insane because everything, I know the nutritional value in everything, and I know how that, you know, what part of the body it's going to help if you eat this and this many servings. And we have, like, I'm like, oh, you careful what you wish for.
I'm
not
going
anywhere. I want
your refrigerator chart.
Yeah. Oh, I'll give you a copy of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm really not kidding.
Yeah. No, nor am I. In fact, if I were not in comedy, I would be a nutritionist. I would work in that world. It fascinates me to no end.
That's
science
so
of it all.
Cool.
Oh my, I love it.
Hopefully after this podcast, you'll get another book offer. Someone's going to be like, please write an irreverent
nutrition
book.
How dare you even think that I haven't already gotten.
Have you gotten that book over?
Please.
I can't wait.
I don't
to
have
read
time.
It. Can I pre-order it?
No, I'm not writing anything. I don't have time. It took me 4 years to write a book that you can read in one day. I can't. It's hard.
I've had an outline for a book sitting on my computer for the past 2 years, so I really understand you in this moment.
Wonderful.
It's really sort of awful.
Yeah.
The writing part.
Yes.
It's a slog.
It is.
Yeah.
And I dropped out. I failed 3 grades and dropped out of high school and got a GED, and my cat ate.
The fat cat ate the GED.
Another cat.
A different
cat. Ate a quarter of it, and I have it framed. But I don't like to do work like that. That's why I don't write jokes down. That's why it takes me 4 years to write a book you can read sitting by the pool one day. But it's also the most rewarding. Finishing that book, I was like, I am something very special.
Do your kids think you're funny?
When I try really hard. When I try really hard.
Mm.
And I also, when I'm trying hard, I feel like a hack.
Mm.
It's the hackiest side of me that they laugh at.
What are you going to do? They're 3 and a half.
Stephanie's the favorite in the house.
Mm.
Yeah. She thinks I'm funny. We cry laugh together.
That's another win.
It really is.
Yeah. So cool. Well, you have a tour coming up.
I do.
Which I think we should tell the people about.
I'm pretty much always on tour.
Okay.
But I'm setting out in the new year on what I've decided to call the Majorly Minor Market Tour. And actually, I believe Iowa City is on this tour. It might even be sold out, and it's months ahead of time. I think we have a mutual love for one another.
It's like a really cute reunion.
Yeah. Here I come, Iowa City.
Yeah.
But I'm also hitting Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Hey-o.
Huntsville, Alabama. Omaha, Nebraska. Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah.
Breckenridge, Colorado. Colorado Springs. I mean, you could go to my website and get these actual cities, but I think next weekend I'm going to be in Chattanooga. I'm going to be in Huntsville. I'm hitting majorly minor market.
I like that. We'll put the link on the swipe up on our stories, guys, so you can
find out. It's all new material.
Ooh.
It's a new hour of material. It's very fun. Yeah.
And then you have a project coming up also that I'm very excited about. What can you tell us about First Ladies?
Jennifer Aniston is playing the first female president of the United States, and I play the first lady. My wife and I wrote the movie.
So cool.
We are producing it with Jennifer. We're big Hollywood types, even though I do go to minor markets to deliver jokes.
You know what? I really like that you're egalitarian with your talent. You really offer it to everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I work with Jennifer Aniston, but I will absolutely swing by Huntsville, Alabama to report back to Jennifer what is happening out there.
Great.
Or Jen, as we call her in her close circle. That's all I can really tell you.
All right.
I really can't tell you anything other than that. But other than it's filming this year, I think in a few months.
So cool.
I think this summer we're going to start filming.
So like anytime you need like a coffee or a matcha on set, just holler at your girl. Let me know. I'll come by. Be like, that was very funny.
Are you a Jennifer Aniston fan?
I'm a both of you fan.
Oh, okay, great.
And I'm also a big fan of the premise.
I'm an oat milk latte
Are you?
Person.
Uh-huh. I made myself one this morning, in fact. Sometimes I get a little like extra and go for a coconut milk latte.
No.
Just depends on the day.
No coconut milk.
Most of it's watery, but I have a brand that's very good. I'll send you the
I do like link. Taking a big knife and cracking open a coconut, though,
yeah.
And just drinking a coconut.
But, I like that,
and
too.
Eating the meat.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's delicious.
A lot of calcium, protein. Anyway.
That chart. I can't wait for this chart.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I got one last question for you. The podcast is called Work in Progress.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what feels to you in this moment or this week or this year like a work in progress in your life.
There's so many works in progress. I mean, my health, my physical, but also, as I've mentioned, I mean, my wife and I, we laugh so hard together. We work together. We obviously live together. Mm. We have so much fun. But we also, in raising kids, it brings up a whole different level and world of stuff you've never gone through together.
Mm.
And trying to navigate a partnership with people that have been raised differently. Having twins is hilarious when somebody just has one child. that's hilarious and adorable. Anyway, that is a work in progress for myself and her with us as a couple, because we are really, we fumble and struggle through that. But what we have going for us is we do love each other so much.
Mm.
And it's a real work in progress.
Mm.
Parenting and being a partnership. I mean, from marriage to writing together, we're about to direct a movie together. We're raising wow. twins together. But none of that even was anything to us, but like, this is fun and we have the same sensibility and we laugh so hard. But then these two little roommates of ours showed up. And then you go, wow, this is a challenge.
A whole other thing.
It is such another thing. It's great.
Yeah.
And we have got it all, but it is hard.
Yeah.
Make no mistake, it is hard.
Juggling that many balls is not easy.
Yeah.
But it looks fun.
It's a grand old time.
That's so cool.
I wouldn't trade anything, anyone. But man, it's not a breeze.
Yeah.
It is not a breeze.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This show is executive produced by me, Sophia Bush, and Sim Sarna. Our supervising producer is Allison Bresnick. Our associate producer is Caitlin Lee. Our editor is Josh Windisch. And our music was written by Jack Garrett and produced by Mark Foster. This show is brought to you by Brilliant Anatomy.